Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Healing of Agape radio show. Please be sure and check out our website at loginservice.com. And this is Eva Herr. Check out mine, www.evaherr.com. Tonight we have somebody that I think is just a brilliant man. His name is Dr. Claude Swanson. And he's written a wonderful book called The Synchronized Universe. Hello, Dr. Swanson. How are you?
Hi, Eva. How are you?
I'm great. And thank you so much for coming on my show. So tell everybody, for those of them who don't know you, tell them a little bit about who you are and what your background is, if you don't mind.
Sure. Well, when I was a young kid, I got very interested in how the universe worked. And that's really been my driving force. I guess curiosity has kind of carried me through. I got a bachelor's degree from MIT in physics, and a PhD from Princeton University in physics, hoping to get the answers to how things really work, and instead I just had more questions. And that's in the mid-80s I discovered remote viewing, and I found out that a lot of the things in the paranormal are real, even though our science doesn't tell us about it. That's really been the theme of a lot of my quest in the past 15, 20 years.
Well, just for everybody, I forgot to mention this. I am in the chat room tonight, and we will be having call-ins if any of you are interested in calling in a little later in the show. So tell us what you found out about remote viewing, Dr. Swanson. A lot of people don't believe that's really real. I believe you.
Well, you know, one of the problems with our education system is it kind of educates the left brain. The linguistic part, the part that memorizes, the part that does logic. And the right brain, the more intuitive part of us, our educational system sort of kind of suppresses. So the more education you have, the more difficult it is sometimes to be psychic or to learn how to do these things. And since I had a lot of education 2 years postdoc after my PhD, I've had my left brain really worked on, and my right brain didn't have a lot of practice. So I was very interested as I began exploring these different areas of the paranormal. I did a lot of research to figure out what was real, because if we're ever going to have a real, true science, a real, true physics that understands these things, we have to first of all understand which things are real. You know, we get so much disinformation from the press that makes fun of some of these various paranormal activities. So I really wanted to have an objective conclusion on my own, what's real, what's not. I found out there's a lot of evidence that the remote viewing really does go on. You know, the CIA and the military in the U.S. had a 20-year program that developed it. They trained people how to do it. They used it for intelligence gathering, and it worked very well. When it finally fell apart, they tried to put up some TV programs to make it look to the public like it didn't work, but it really did. But what attracted me is that it can teach anyone how to do it. Even if you're very left-brained, it has techniques that kind of keep your analytical mind very busy and gives your intuition a chance to start pulling in the subconscious information, which is where our intuition actually works. And even in my first session, which was a real simple target, you know, for those who don't know how remote viewing works, basically you're given a number, an 8-digit number, something like that. So you have no idea what the target really is.
Is it like longitude and latitude number, or what is it?
Well, in the early days, they thought that you had to give them Latin long to identify the target. What they eventually found out was that any identification will work just as well. So any random set of numbers will work just as well, for example.
As long as they have that number as the intent being that place?
Yes, somewhere there's an envelope, and inside the envelope is a piece of paper that has written down on it what the target is. So that's a way of expressing intent. As long as
it
is specified, that's all your subconscious needs. And the first example I did was a real simple one, which was just a photograph of a couple of mountains. Well, what I was drawing, actually, was a couple of mountains in the background, and in the foreground, there was this dark train going from left to right with this stream of smoke coming out behind it. It turned the actual target was a couple of mountains in the background, these two black jets streaking from left to right with this trail of smoke coming out from the back of the jets. So even in the first detection I did, I could see that I was picking up information. You know, it was not perfect, but I had maybe 20 or 25% of my targets be really very, very good.
That's amazing.
Target. Yeah, and of course, you know, half of them probably I just would go off. My left brain, you know, that analytical part still would jump in. It would still try to, you know, it would think it knew what the target was, so it starts embellishing, and that's usually how the problems start with remote viewing. But it happened enough that I realized that this stuff is real, it really works. And, you know, we all have this ability.
I'm sorry?
So we all basically are psychic. Every person is psychic, essentially. And it's just a matter of training, having the right kind of techniques to be able to access it. Studies have been done when you have a person wired up with their brain waves on an EEG machine, so you can watch the brain waves of a person. And if you send that person a psychic message, they may not know that they're receiving it, but it shows up on their brainwave pattern. The brain does know that the message is coming in. It's very clear. So the process of becoming psychic for all of us is a process of meditation, of hypnosis in some cases, of learning how to quiet that chattering analytical mind so that we can listen to those little quiet messages from the subconscious. That's where the psychic information is. And we all have this ability. It's just a matter of practice and training.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know Danion Brinkley used to do some work doing remote viewing. Did you happen to interview him or talk with it? Oh, Claude, are you near a computer or on your phone? Can you hit *3 so it'll increase your volume so that people can hear you a little bit better?
I think I have my volume all the way up right now, Eva.
Hit *3. It might make a noise, but it'll increase it on the conference call.
I will try.
I'm getting that message here in the chat room.
I'm sorry. Okay, I hit *3.
Okay. So did you work with Danion or talk with him any about that?
I've known Danion for maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. I've talked to him a number of times about his different psychic abilities and different adventures. As you know, after his near-death experience, his first one, he developed psychic ability to a large degree. And I've had some wonderful talks with him about that. As you know, he has the prophecies of the future. He was given over 100 prophecies the first time he dies. And at this point, about 95 or 96% of them have come true.
Mm-hmm. Have you done any research on any of that?
Or
any of how he does what he does?
Well, for me, the interesting thing is that prophecy is possible because in our laws of physics, these things, in our current laws of physics, a lot of these things should not be possible. There's just too much uncertainty due to the uncertainty principle that we should not be able to do these things. But oftentimes, psychics and prophets are able to see the future in such detail and with such high accuracy that it's really telling us that there's something wrong with our current science. And that's what's interesting to me. One of the examples Danion gives is seeing an accident on the street about to happen. A couple minutes before it happened, he pictured the entire event and was able to intervene and stop it from happening. We have a lot of examples like that that show that the future is determined clearly enough that we can see it, and so prophecy can be pretty accurate. But
so
at the same time, if we take action based upon what we know, we are able to change it. So that's a really interesting and important message.
So it's not what is, but what might be based on the current circumstances unless there's intervention, right?
It's like a maximum likelihood probability. It's the most likely path of the future, and it's the path that we'll probably end up with unless something dramatic happens. And usually you have to take information that comes from the prophecy, that comes from psychic information, that goes outside the normal physics laws. And when you can take advantage of that, can change the future. We see now with global warming and a lot of the earth changes that are unfolding around us, we see things that are very reminiscent of some of the prophecies that we've been hearing about for a long time. But I still believe that if people use their consciousness, and if we meditate, if we pray, if we put out those thoughts very strongly, it's still possible to change some of the events that otherwise are going to unfold in our timeline. So I think one of the things we're learning about as a people, you know, on this planet right now, is how to use our mental powers, our thought processes, in a productive and constructive way. And I think that we need to kind of wake up and realize how much power we have when we do that.
Now, I know that you address a lot of these things in your book. Do you know how the laws of physics supports intent? Does that make any sense?
Let me back up a second there. My website is www.synchronizeduniverse.com. Synchronizeduniverse.com, and synchronized has a Z in it. It's a little hard for some people to spell it. And that's the best place to go to get an overview of the book and of what I'm about. And it's also, you can purchase the book very easily on the website. What I have been finding from looking at current physics research is that our current science is breaking down. We have at least a half a dozen major areas right now in mainstream physics where we have experiments that are violating our current physics theory.
What would some of those be?
Well, like the dark matter, for example, in the universe, and the dark energy. Those are things that physics did not predict. Those are things that actually don't even agree with our current laws, and we've been having to kind of keep bending the laws to try to fit in these strange discoveries. 5 or 10 years ago, we thought we understood the Big Bang, how the universe was created, how it was expanding. Now we're finding a lot of anomalies, things that just do not work. One example would be quasars. They're supposed to be these really powerful, big, gigantic accumulations of energy at the far edges of the universe. But we find that there are pictures, photographs from telescopes, that show these quasars attached to nearby galaxies by clouds of dust. So
really?
They have to be nearby. So they have to be nearby. They can't be far away. And a lot of astronomers who should be studying this and pointing it out are actually trying not to look at it. It's kind of embarrassing. It doesn't fit in with the current theory. And so there's a resistance on the part of mainstream science to look at some of these things. Another example, cold fusion, which made the headlines in the late 80s and then was poo-pooed and ridiculed. Within a few months after that, the government had these two studies hastily done that supposedly showed that cold fusion was, did not work. Now we found out that one of those studies, at least, was itself a hoax. They actually doctored their data to make it look like it wasn't working when it really was.
What was the study for the people that don't know? Because, I mean, if you visit any of these chat rooms, I mean, this is one of the hottest topics there is.
Right. Within a couple of months of when the first announcement was made for cold fusion, the government, Department of Energy, funded MIT and Caltech to each do a quick study to see if they could duplicate cold fusion. However, the people they picked to do their studies were not experts in the area where the cold fusion experiment had been done. They were actually physicists who worked in a competing program that would lose money if cold fusion proved out. The MIT study, when it was completed, was published, and it claimed that no energy was generated. However, we now know that that was the third draft of their report. The first two drafts showed positive energy being produced.
And how would they do that? What kind of experiments would they do to test that or research it?
Well, cold fusion is basically a process where you have heavy water, was the simplest experiment. They do heavy water, and you have platinum and palladium, two metals, and you're passing electricity through it. But what the MIT group did was they just looked at the energy coming out of this device, and they subtracted it out. So that in their final graph, it looked like zero energy was being produced when actually they'd been getting positive energy. So it was just misrepresentation of their results. Mm-hmm.
Now, would that be energy coming from the vacuum?
Well, one problem, one of the reasons people attacked cold fusion was that we don't have a theory to explain it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But that shouldn't matter. If you're a real scientist, you take your data and you look at it. If it's good data, then it's time to fix the theory or revise the theory or come up with a new theory. But instead, because this was a very contentious political issue, because the energy companies that are very sensitive about competing technologies, there's a lot of political pressure against new energy technologies that might threaten oil. So this is it's a very controversial subject. But the bottom line is, at this point, over 500 labs around the world have now duplicated the cold fusion experiments, including the U.S. Navy, including EPRI, which is the big research arm of the American power companies. A lot of major laboratories have duplicated cold fusion, so it is a real effect, but our science does not understand it, and mainstream publications in general will not talk about it. Another anomaly area, which is probably connected, it might be the explanation for cold fusion, is called charge clusters. Everyone who ever learned anything about electricity, has heard that like charges repel each other, unlikes attract. So if you have two electrons, they're both negative, they push away from each other. But it turns out if you have a billion electrons, a whole lot of electrons, and you push them into a real small space, at some point they stop pushing away from each other and they begin sticking together. This is called a charge cluster, and it was considered a very hot area in some parts of the government research a few years ago. These charge clusters, when they hit a piece of metal, actually cause fusion. They actually create new elements. So it sounds a whole lot like this may be the key to what's going on inside the cold fusion experiments.
I'm an idiot about this kind of stuff, Claude, but you and I have sat down so many times because I have so many questions to pick your brain. And would this have anything to do with somewhat of electromotive force?
No, but I think what's happening is that in conventional physics today, we kind of overlook the vacuum. We say the vacuum is just empty, nothing there, or it's some random energy. But when you start to get a charge cluster, means that there's a lot of energy concentrated in a very small volume. You have a whole lot of electrons pushed together like that, and at that point, the vacuum energy itself becomes important, and that's probably why they're able to stick together, and probably you're pulling energy out of the vacuum. That's probably where it's coming from that allows the whole process to happen. And these are things that our current science is overlooking right now. But I just was mentioning a few of these points to show that even in mainstream science right now, there are problems. Don't think that everything is all solved. But when you get into the paranormal, remote viewing, psychic ability, ESP, psychokinesis, which is the ability to affect things at a distance with your mind, what we find is that those forces, the psychic forces, don't even weaken with distance. Like physical forces like gravity, electricity, those forces get weak with distance. The further away, the less force. But with the psychic force, it doesn't happen that way. You can exert a force or influence something or send a psychic message 5,000 or 6,000 miles with just exactly the same accuracy as you can sending it into the next room. So, and even more remarkable than that, you can send a message forward and backward in time.
Really?
Very different, which makes it very different from the normal physical forces. And it says, hey, wait a minute, let's go back to the drawing board and start redoing our science from the ground up, because these experiments say there's a revolution going on in science, and it's going to lead to inventions and technology we can hardly even dream of today. But a lot of this stuff now is on a very firm basis where lots and lots of experiments have been done. So it's actually solid, and it's really time for science to begin taking a serious look at it. And it'll happen slowly because at the same time, as you know, there's a lot of propaganda and people are afraid of being laughed at and that kind of thing goes on. But it's very important stuff that's going on right now. There's a real revolution unfolding.
How would you send information back in time? How would that occur, and how would you prove? What is the proof of that? What happens when you do that?
Yeah, well, one simple kind of experiment, and it's been done a couple different ways now. Let's take the simplest one first. What scientists have found is that a good detector of psychic information is called a random event generator. It basically makes, it's like a little coin flipper. It's like as though it kind of flips coins, heads, tails. And let's call the head a one and the tail a zero, okay?
Okay.
So on the average, over many, many flips, you get a half. You get equal numbers of heads and tails. But if you ask a psychic to try to affect this little random event generator to get more ones than you do zeros, we find that you're able to do it. So they're able to exert that force even over very large distances and make these little generators make more ones than zeros or vice versa, depending upon what you're asking for. Now, you say, okay, I'm going to do the experiment today. I'll set up my little generator. I'll record the results. I'm not going to look at them. But then 2 weeks from today, I'm going to ask, Joe Schmo to try to affect my results and make them come up more heads and tails, let's say, okay? So they've done that type of thing over and over again, many, many people, many, many times, and they find out that, yes, they're able to affect it in the direction that they want it to go.
Well, let me ask you a question here that just popped into my head. when people have events that happen in their lives that cause negative emotions, would it be possible based on that to go back in time and affect what happened so that emotion could be healed? Does that make any sense, so that the emotion wouldn't feel as intense or something like that?
I think it probably is. Let me tell you a couple of things. One of the things that they believe right now is that to make this work, it's better if you don't look at the results until the future point arrives, So like no one knows how it came out until you ask the psychic to go back in time. And that kind of fits in with quantum mechanics, which says that it's an uncertainty involved in the event until someone looks at it. But we now have experiments where also healers go back in time and affect subjects, clients, in the past. And they'll measure the results in the past, and then they'll ask the healer in the future to go back in time and affect those results, and they're able to do it. And in that case, you have a conscious observer, namely you have the patient, receiving the effects. So I would not be at all surprised if you can do that, Eva. There's also a technique in psychotherapy where you have the person go back in time and heal a past event. And that also has been shown to be effective. So I think there's probably a lot of flexibility for the mind to move back and forth in time and heal those hurts.
Now, would I noticed you said that a healer would come in and heal. A lot of people say that no one can heal you, that you have to heal yourself. So would that mean that a healer would be affecting your electromagnetic frequency?
It could.
Is that how that works, or what would it be?
Well, as far as the details of how all this stuff works, I think we're just sort of in the process of learning what the mechanisms really are. There are probably a lot of different ways that healing works with different dimensions and different types of energies.
Mm-hmm.
But right now we do know that if you measure the brain waves, for example, of the patient while the healer is working on them, and the healer could be in the future working on them, but if you measure the brain waves, they show a difference at the time they're being worked on.
Interesting.
Receiving the healing. So there are measurable physical changes in the patient.
Now, I know also in your book you talk about Dr. Raymond Moody and his work on near-death experiences. Now, the other day, last week, I think, I did an interview with a guy named Dr. William Roll, who's a parapsychologist that also worked with Daniel and Raymond. And I was asking him, and I know you've had this because I saw you when it happened one time. People have experiences that are what I call becoming enlightened, and they can come in steps. And I wanted to know, why does that happen? Why does somebody become spontaneously enlightened like that? Because, you know, you feel giddy and floaty when it happens, and it's just an amazing feeling. And he was telling me that the right side of your parietal side of your brain changes due to a near-death experience or some terrible trauma you've had in your life. How does that work from the physics perspective?
Well, I've been working on a theory to try to take our current science and then show how it needs to be changed and expanded to be able to account for paranormal effects, because that's where our science has to go, is to begin to accept this stuff, you know, take it seriously and integrate it into our science instead of just, you know, push it off in the corner and not looking at it. One of the things that happens is that our brain has certain frequencies that kind of oscillates or vibrates at.
And these are frequencies in hertz, right?
Well, yeah.
Or measurable frequencies.
Well, I'm not sure.
Not just woo-woo stuff that people talk about, but some science that can be measured.
I think that someday we'll be able to measure it. Right now, these are probably quite a bit higher frequencies than we're able to measure. It's not the normal alpha and beta type frequencies,
mm-hmm.
but it has to do with when the brain becomes coherent, when the vibrations in different parts of the brain kind of couple together and become synchronized.
Mm-hmm.
So you have like the left and the right brain become coupled together. You see a lot of what they call coherence, which means that different oscillations in different parts of the brain are all kind of cycling together. They're all vibrating together. When that happens, your brain takes on a power, an ability to both couple into the distant universe as well as affect the distant universe. And that's really sort of the key. It's almost like becoming resonant, like when you have a tuning fork or a guitar string, you know.
Right.
You vibrate one, and if the other one is tuned right, it'll start to vibrate too. It's sympathetic, it'll vibrate at the same frequency. It can become coupled together. And in the same way, our brain can couple in with other people's brains, with distant brains. When we're having ESP or psychokinesis, we're coupling in with some other person or some other object. But you can also become coupled in with the entire universe in this way. So I think this is part of what's behind that feeling you're talking about.
Now, you know, I'm a medical intuitive, and I don't know what it is that I do, but I'm able to detect disease and organs and emotions attached, and I've always wondered what made me suddenly be able to do that. What is it that I'm tuning into? I know we're all tied into consciousness as one, but am I tuning into time, space, intervals, and frequency, or what exactly could it be? I'm sure that's probably what Daniel and every other psychic tunes into, but how would that work?
Well, that's a big question. If you go to my website, synchronizeduniverse.com, I do talk about some of this stuff, about how, about the whole synchronized universe model, which is the model that I'm proposing, which is the beginning of an explanation for how to start accounting for some of these psychic phenomena. And it involves what we said before, a resonance, you know, things that are cycling or vibrating together. My suspicion is that that part of it may be that the healer starts to vibrate with or become resonant with part of the energies of the patient, you know. So you start to connect together and resonate together. But you know, I think we're just beginning to understand this stuff right now. For me, it's exciting because to me this is a science of the future. You know, we were talking about UFOs, and some people say, well, they're impossible. But if you start to look at the new science that's coming out here, we find out that a lot of abilities that we thought were impossible before may become possible. I mean, one of the simplest things is teleportation. You know, people love to look at Star Trek and watch Scotty beam up somebody, you know, like a transporter. But we know there are yogis in India who have been able to do this, who have teleported under, even Uri Geller, the famous psychic from the 70s, has done teleportation of a crystal out of a closed container with scientists watching under very heavily controlled circumstances.
Really?
This was published in the National Academy of Sciences. So some of these abilities that we think of as being science fiction really do happen in the world. We don't understand them yet, but the model I'm proposing here is a way of starting to be able to understand. I have a way of kind of explaining how teleportation can happen in the synchronized universe model. So I think, you know, it's a really exciting time because we're going to learn about things that we thought were impossible before. And, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll be able to commute to work by teleporters before
Amazing. Well, what about orbs, Dr. Swanson? I know that there was a lot written in your book about orbs and such. What are those?
Yeah, orbs are really, really interesting. They're really important. They're kind of central to a lot of this stuff. I used to own part of a haunted house in West Virginia, and had a lot of friends there, and they were photographing these things, and there would be spheres sometimes on photographic film. Sometimes it would be just a streak across the film. I took quite a few of these myself, and basically they're little balls of light that could be an inch to maybe several inches in diameter. They have intelligence. Some of them certainly have intelligence in the way they operate.
Really?
What I believe is that they are, well, for lack of a better term, it's our soul, or it's part of our soul. It's an intelligent, conscious part of a living being, or it could be a deceased being, but it's the part that survives. And the reason I say that is because there's several different types of experiments that end up with the same result. When people go out of body, when you have an out of body experience, these little orbs also appear. And when the person having the OBE goes to a certain location, we've actually been able to photograph little orbs at that location. So it seems like this
is amazing.
What a conscious part of us looks like when it's out of body. When people die, nurses by the hundreds have reported seeing a glowing orb leave the body and rise up into the sky, you know, at the moment.
It just sits chills on my arms.
You know, it's such an important phenomenon. I have a friend who is a ghost hunter in Leesburg, Virginia, who has gone to hundreds of houses in Leesburg, these old haunted houses there. People ask him to come. And I asked him, I said, can you photograph a ghost? Have you ever been able to photograph a ghost? And he says, no, you can never photograph a ghost. I've taken thousands of photographs. You could never photograph them. All you get are these darn little orbs showing up. So once again, when there are conscious entities around and the paranormal, it seems like that consciousness occurs in the form of an orb. One of the nicest, most wonderful pictures I've ever seen was taken by the daughter of a friend of mine in this farmhouse in West Virginia. We were all looking for orbs one night, trying to photograph them. We had a lot of special equipment there, but the best photograph was taken by this 12-year-old girl who was walking back to the house, and she saw this 3-foot diameter orb in the afternoon sunlight, and she said, I thought it wanted me to take its picture.
Oh my
gosh. A conscious interaction somehow. She snapped its picture and then forgot about it, and this picture came back with the developed photograph. It's a beautiful. It shows it's semi-transparent, it's reflecting the sky and the ground, and you can see things behind it. So, you know, these things are real, and I think they're very important in understanding, you know, who we really are. We're not just this physical body. We're a lot more than that, and the orb is one little window into the conscious part of who we are.
Mm-hmm. Have you done any consideration on the consciousness, Adam? I don't know any other word to call it, consciousness, Adam.
I'm not familiar with the term. I'm very interested in consciousness and what is the key to consciousness and how it works. And certainly the orb seems to be a vehicle that goes with consciousness, that carries it, that embodies it. And what I'm trying to do is understand these orbs from a scientific point of view so that we can really begin to really understand what the forces are that allow paranormal things to happen. One example to give you, how real these orbs are. A famous psychic was doing remote viewing experiments where he had a target that he was directed to go to and trying to describe what he saw at the target. It turned out that when he was at the target or giving accurate information, there were sensors. They had little instruments around the target that were going crazy. They were magnetic sensors, electrical sensors, optical sensors, and they were all showing that there was an unusual energy form present at the target when he was successfully remote viewing. So again, it's this out-of-body form, this orb, that seems to be what's showing up even in those experiments. So it does have measurable qualities to it. So we're just starting to understand these things. We're really good at the beginning. But it's very exciting and very promising.
Do you think it would be that when I say consciousness unit, I talked to Dr. Roy Scruggs about this a bit, and he comes up with this term, a scientist term, irreducible unit. Do you think that's what they are? Or does that make any sense?
I'd have to know more about what he...
A unit that you... no electrons and no protons. You can't break it down any further. Just a neutron.
I think that's probably certainly possible. It seems to me that one of these orbs corresponds to the consciousness of a living or a conscious entity. So that when that you can have an orb or a conscious entity without an alive person, because we know that when a person dies, these orbs do exit the body. In fact, they've shown that the weight of the body on the table changes suddenly by about half an ounce to an ounce when that orb leaves the body. So we even think it has some weight to it, a small amount of weight, probably because of the energy that it's containing. But it's something very unusual that's very different from our known science, because we don't know how to make up an energy packet that just holds together in the way that these orbs do. So there are other forces. That's one of the things I'm really curious about. There are higher forces that are involved here that are not currently in our science. If you heard about the prana or the chi, the essence of Chinese medicine, it's also the core of Chinese martial arts, like qigong, where the martial artist is able to project this energy several feet, maybe and break an iron rod in some cases. The Chinese have developed a lot of knowledge about this qi energy, and it seems to be that type of energy is central to what makes up these orbs, and it's central to what makes up our consciousness. So we have a lot to learn still about this, but that's where I'm starting.
Let's talk about multiple dimensions and parallel universes for a minute. I'm kind of the understanding that universes are those things with boundaries, and dimensions are those things that you pass through. Have you any consideration on those things? I would imagine there are as many dimensions as there are grains of sand, maybe in the ascension process. But the universes would be those things maybe where you go when you go out of body. Have you thought any on that?
I have, yeah. When I began trying to make a physics model to explain some of the things that happen in the paranormal, one of the things I ended up with fairly early on was this idea of the synchronized universe, that particles that make up the matter in the universe, like electrons, for example, only interact with each other when conditions are just right. their velocities have to be aiming at each other, and that when that happens, they connect across great distances. So when you have synchronized motions at the very small scale, then the universe becomes connected, and you can start looking at one connected universe as being like one dimension, you know, one layer, if you like.
Right.
I'm going very quickly. If you go to the website, synchronizeduniverse.com, I give more information about how this works. But what it leads to is the idea that, you know, matter, what we think of as being solid, is not solid. You know, it's mostly empty, as we already know. But other matter from somebody else's universe can be passing right through ours right now, and we would not see it. You know, so you can have parallel universes that overlap in space and in time, and yet they exert almost no force on each other. And that was one of the consequences of the synchronized universe model. And it helps explain how parallel dimensions can happen, and also how the higher dimensions, like the astral domain, and the domains that the spirits move in, how they can also be right here where we are, and yet we would not feel much of a force from them. But, you know, from their point of view, you know, they're real, and we're kind of the illusion, you know. But if you go back to, like, the Hindu mythology, they say that this physical universe is the illusion. You know, the matter is the Maya. That's the illusion. That's what they teach.
Right.
And from this model I've developed, it says the same thing. You know, it says how, you know, matter is kind of an illusion because things happen to be synchronized. It looks like it's solid, but it's really not.
So if I'm understanding you right, the different universes, they're all right here, just vibrating at different frequencies.
They can be, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense. That means that if you want to shift into another dimension, you can do it by changing your frequency.
And that would be your consciousness level, right?
Exactly, right. So it starts to back up some of the things that we know from metaphysics. You know.
Now, do you have a perspective on how many parallel universes are in existence right now? I know Edward Witten's work on the string theory supports 11. What's your perspective?
Right. Well, yeah, there's a difference between people use the word dimension in different ways, okay?
Mm-hmm.
For example, your room has a length, width, and a height, okay? So that's
mm-hmm.
three dimensions. So we say we're in a three-dimensional universe plus time, which makes four, okay? But you can also have many parallel universes in the same space. And people sometimes say, you call that a dimension, too. So if I shift from one parallel system to another, that's also called a dimension, you know, for some folks.
Is that, would it be accurate to say that universes are things with boundaries, and dimensions are those things you pass through based on frequency?
I'm not sure a universe has to have a boundary to it, not in the conventional sense.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily have to have a boundary. Our universe doesn't have a boundary, according to current science anyway. I mean, you go out and go out and go out further and further and further, and they say, well, at some point, you get to the Big Bang. But given all the ways that our picture of the universe has changed over the past 10 years, I don't think anyone can say with certainty that that's what you're going to get to. You're not going to find the Big Bang when you go out 10 or 12 billion light years. You might find something that you hadn't expected.
Right.
So.
And I would imagine, since we live in a hologram, that's why we're three-dimensional, and that other universes may be six-dimensional or eight-dimensional. Is that possible?
Because
you wouldn't be confined
to
a physical body.
I think when we talk about the higher dimensions, in other words, when you leave the physical level and you go into maybe the astral, the realm of spirit, okay, or you mm-hmm. go into the causal or the mental, because a lot of the higher dimensions are talked about in the old Hindu and the old yogic and Buddhist philosophy in China and Tibet and in India. And we have a lot of information from them psychically what these higher dimensions are like. And they certainly do have different numbers of dimensions from our normal physical universe, and also the rules are different. Here, matter is matter. You know, it doesn't disappear mm-hmm. when you close your eyes. It has a permanence to it, and there are certain physical laws we have for gravity and electricity that we kind of believe. But when you go to the higher domains, like the astral, thought, it has much more power. You know, what you believe manifests itself. If you ever saw Robin Williams' wonderful movie, What Dreams May Come,
oh, yes.
that's a trip into the astral dimension, which is what we also call that heaven. Okay, there's different levels to it, different parts of it, but in that realm, thought and imagination and belief manifests instantly. So that these higher dimensions, the rules are different.
Well, we've got about 15 minutes, Dr. Swanson. I know you've researched so many things. I'd like to give you, if you would, a chance to talk about your most favorite thing. What would that be?
Wow. I think probably the most exciting thing, probably to me, is just learning about the extra dimensions that we all have as human beings. You know, I was raised in a small town in America, the normal education, and kind of believing that picture of the universe and who we are was accurate, you know. And what I've learned since then, as the great out-of-body pioneer Robert Monroe used to say, is we are far more than our physical bodies. And that's what has been most exciting to me, is to learn that we have these higher dimensions, the astral and these other dimensions, that our soul is real, that basically when our physical body dies, we don't die. It keeps right on going. Most of these people, like Daniel Brinkley, who have near-death experiences, what they say is, you know, I walked out of my body, I floated out of it, the body fell down, and I kept on going. And they look back, and they look at that body, and they say, I don't need that. What good is that? You know, I feel much better now. You know, so that
they don't even realize that anything's happened, do they?
A lot.
Except they feel better.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And Daniel said, I thought I was better looking than that. You know. but so they feel better and they're able to fly. Whenever they want to go, they can just go by thinking about it. They've tested, you know, these accounts when they're in this out-of-body state, and when they come back, they're able to describe events they saw unfolding while they were in that state, and they all check out. So we know it's not somebody's imagination, it's not a delusion, it's not oxygen deprivation, it's real. They really were out-of-body, and they were able to see things and report
mm-hmm.
back on things. So it's a real state, and then they go into this realm of light, know, and of love, and beings of light they meet relatives who have departed, they thought they were dead, but their relatives are still alive, you know, in the spirit realm. They're totally alive, and all this is going on, and to me, this is a revelation. You know, if everyone really understood this and really believed it, it would do away with our fear of death, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
Get rid of that fear, and we would live our life knowing that we live basically forever. Also, we know that we are answerable for things that we do. And if we knew that, we might make different decisions, you know? We might treat our environment a little bit differently if we knew we were still going to be around in 1,000 years, you know? Maybe
mm-hmm.
we're back here again in another body. We might want to be a little nicer to the ocean, nicer to the air, you know? It might change our activity. So, to me, there's a lot of implications from what we're learning about the soul and about these higher dimensions and about, you know, what it truly means to be a human being.
Well, the last thing I'd like to ask you about is, we always talk about agape, treating other people like you want to be entreated, and how important that is to raise the mass consciousness of the world. We know it works. We know it has effects when you treat someone a certain way. How does physics support the transport of intent to raise the consciousness of the world through agape?
Well, what every person says who goes through a near-death experience and goes to the other side and goes through a life review and then comes back, what they all say is that they learn that love is the most powerful force in the universe, that love is what really matters. From our current physics, of course, has its eyes closed right now, doesn't recognize any of this stuff, is not even paying attention to it. But the new physics that I think is starting to unfold, and that's what I'm trying to help develop, from that perspective, love is probably like the resonance idea we talked about before with the two guitar strings. When you vibrate together, when people are in sympathy, when they move together, that's probably some of what love is all about. And that's what the synchronized universe model that I've developed is about. It gives us a way to start talking about love and some of these other higher emotions from a physics point of view, to start trying to, you know, bring together the science with the spirituality, you know. To me, that has to be the future, is we have these different disciplines, different systems of knowledge. We have science on the one hand, we have religion and spirituality on the other. To me, the truth needs to bring them all into one system of knowledge where they're all consistent with one another, and that's where we're heading, I believe.
Well, Dr. Swanson, I can't thank you enough for coming on my show, and I can't thank you enough for being who you are and doing the work that you're doing, because it's of vast importance, I believe. Tell us again one more time your website so everybody can check you out. Is it Synchronized Universe or The Synchronized Universe?
No, it's not. No, The. It's just www.synchronizeduniverse.com, and synchronized has a Z in it. So it's www.synchronizeduniverse.com.
Thank you so much. For those of you who haven't read his book, it should be the next book on your reading list because it's amazing. Thank you, Dr. Swanson, and please promise me that you'll come back again soon, because I have so many more questions I could spend another hour or two. And agape to you, my friend.
Agape to you.
You have been listening to a Blog In Broadcasting service, a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much, and good night.